from WXXI News. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour will be made between now and August 31st. This is the window of time for the public to offer feedback to a proposed new code of conduct for the Rochester City School District. And at the heart of this proposal is how to discipline students effectively. Do we suspend or expel too many students, particularly in urban centers? Are there other ways to handle perceived misbehavior? Or is a firm hand the way to achieve more discipline? The Rochester Community Task Force on School Climate has released the new draft code of conduct. The draft includes some significant alterations, including a change in what kinds of infractions would lead to suspension. This hour, we'll dig into the proposed changes. We'll ask why the committee wants the changes in the first place and whether this plan can work. We invite your feedback. You can call the program 844-295-TALK, toll-free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. My guests for the hour in studio include Adair Lyles. He's a student. He's a member of the committee that we talked about, and he is a student at Rochester Early College International High School. He's going to be a senior this coming year. Nice to have you, Adair.
Yes, sir. Good to be here.
Jennifer Bannister is here. She's from Teen Empowerment and also a member of the Rochester Community Task Force on School Climate. Nice to see you again, Jennifer.
Likewise. Thanks, Evan.
Melanie Funches is here, the Director of Community Engagement for the Mental Health Association and a member as well of what we call CTF, the Community Task Force. Nice to have you, Melanie.
Good afternoon.
And Spiro Michaelides is here. He's a teacher who works with the Gandhi Institute. He's a member of the committee as well. Thank you, Spiro, for joining us.
Thank you so much.
A lot of this discussion has been going on for weeks now when it comes to, are we suspending too many students? We've had conversations about the so-called school-to-prison pipeline, and we're going to talk about that this hour. But I want to start with Adair's personal story. You're 17 years old, going to be a senior this coming year, Adair, at Rochester Early College International High School. And before the program even began, the members of this panel were telling me your own personal story is a good example of why the committee wants some changes to the code of conduct. So tell me about that.
Yes, sir. Well, before I get into that, my story is just like a testament to how the code of conduct is negligent to many of the students in the Rochester City School District. I suffered from mental health issues, anxiety, psychosis, depression. And because of that, that caused my grade of work academically to go down. Like before, many of these issues started around the time I entered high school, around
about 14 years old.
Yeah. Okay. Ninth grade. I was a straight A student. I skipped the seventh grade. I went from seventh to eighth grade. Mm. You know, I never really even knew what a B was. I always had like usually straight A's. You know, and then once these problems started to come in, you know, I couldn't really get the help. I didn't know how how to go about getting that help that I needed, you know, to be a successful student, just a successful person, period. My 10th and 11th grade years of high school suffered very badly because of that. But thank God, you know, I got the help that I needed. You know, before we got this draft code of conduct, the school that I go to, Rochester Early College International High School, the presence at that school kind of fostered the essence of what we're trying to do with the community task force. And they reached out to me. They helped me, you know, when I couldn't focus, you know, I'd react in ways to where I'd lash out as far as, that's kind of a strong term. I'd purposely get myself suspended because at first they didn't know how to help me. You know, they didn't understand the problem, like disrupting class or talking back to a teacher or disrespecting a sensory or even an administrator just so I could get put out of school, because while I'm in school, it's like I'll sit there and it's just like a blackout, like the bell will ring and it's just like.
So you wanted to get suspended?
Yeah, because I couldn't learn. You know, I could not focus. I went to school for months on end and not learned a single solitary thing, you know, and it was very stressful, you know, trying to figure out who I am as a young man, you know, being a teenager, just like going through daily stresses, you know, living in the inner city, you know, just everything. I had the weight of the world on me. It was very stressful. You know, I started losing my hair, you know, suicide attempts, multiple in and out of the hospital. But then like once we really sat down and got to the root, well, what's going on? What's your problems? What is causing this? Then we figured out how to help me. So now like after counseling, therapy, you know, just getting those proper medications and the help that I needed, I'm a more successful person. Now, you know, I'm not in the streets anymore. you know, I'm staying out of trouble. I'm not using drugs because I'm depressed and don't know how to get rid of the pain anymore. You know, now I'm working. I work at the Center for Teen Empowerment on Genesee Street. That's right down the street from my school. You know, I'm an active member of my community. I do a lot of outreach work with young people. I help point young people in the right directions, even working with the community task force to help amend this code of conduct. Because I know for certain behaviors, just like talking back or disrupting, I could get suspended from school. And in those suspensions don't help kids. When you're outside of school, you're not learning anything. And especially in an inner city environment where there's traps in those streets. So now you're putting kids out. You're saying that you want kids to graduate. You want them to go to college and be all that they can be. And you're a teacher. But as your job as a teacher, it's your responsibility to get to your students and put them in a position to where you can teach them. And they're learning and striving and succeeding. And at first, I wasn't doing that. You know, I was just getting into trouble, running around, doing whatever I could do, because at the end of the day, I couldn't get it in school, and I felt like I was a failure. But thank God, after that help, like, I'm in a place to where now I can help others. You know, I can focus. Now, you know, at first, I couldn't stay awake more than, like, 10 minutes in class without falling asleep because I'm so frustrated. So now, like, I can literally sit down, do work. You know, through my work with the Center for Teen Empowerment, just the other day, we had a meeting with RPD to help with inner-city school. Well, inner city kid, children and police officer relations. You know, we met with them before they went to the academy to just help break stereotypes. And then we meet with them afterwards, you know, when they're actually officers. And just to keep fostering these relationships and help get them used to culture so that now it's a more conducive and safer environment in, within the streets. And there's just communication between police officers and youth.
So, Dare, when you would lash out or talk back to teachers, that kind of thing, there are some people listening to this program who would say, well, whether you want to get suspended or not, they should suspend you because you're distracting from other students being able to learn. And what you seem to be saying is when we suspend kids, there's no good outcome coming for them. So what would you say to somebody who says, well, you talk back to a teacher, you should expect to get suspended if you keep doing it?
Okay, well, through many studies, you know, through from universities, just people through decades, it's shown that punishment is not a teaching factor. You know, punishment doesn't help anyone. Like, even with prisons, you know, they're supposed to be correctional facilities, but many people come out with post-traumatic stress, even worse than when they went in, you know. So it's like putting the fear of God into someone is not helping them. That's just letting them know, if I do this, I'm going to be like, you know, just like, they're going to hurt me, you know what I mean? And it's just like they're not understanding the repercussions and the weight that their actions carry. And that's why in this draft code of conduct, we're implementing restorative justice practices. And I myself have even gone through training to be able to facilitate restorative justice meetings in which, for example, a student could commit an offense. So they'd meet with peers, they'd meet with staff, and even administrators, and they'd come together, and we figure out, well, what you did, why did you do that? Well, this is what your actions caused. You disrupted these students. You're not getting your education here, and this is what that equals to. So now they understand the cause of their actions. Well, they understand the effects of their actions, rather. And because now that we understand, we sat down with the student and understand why they acted out the way that they acted, now we can help that student in the proper way and get them the, what's the word? The resources. There we go. Thank you, J-Man. The resources that they need to be a successful and productive member of society. Like, even me, people could say, like you said, some people may say, well, you deserve to get put out. You know, everybody has issues. But as a young person, you know, coming from where I come from, I didn't know how to deal with that. And I thank God I didn't go to another school like Edison or Wilson within the inner city where, like, a lot of these things are just like, you're out. You're gone. You're out. Or, like, they'll just, like, oh, we have school truancy officer. You're going to jail. And now you have to be in the court system. And now you got a record now. Now it's harder for you to find employment. I thank God that I had that, you know, a foundation that supported me. And now I'm productive. I'm helping other young people in my community. I'm becoming a role model. I'm showing those kids who are getting in trouble that there is another way, that things can get better and that you can be productive.
I want to kick it over to Melanie Funches in a moment. I just got our first comment for the hour. Somebody just wrote me saying, this guy is awesome, listening to you talk about your story. But I will say to our listeners, though, hey, we want to hear from all sides of this. If you view discipline in a different way, if you have questions or comments, this panel is happy to address that. And we'd love to hear from you. 844-295-TALK. Melanie Funches, what do you want to weigh in?
Yes. What I want to say is that when we suspend kids, we get them, you put them out. And we know the data is clear that many of our students have experienced trauma. And when we are, if we're looking at things from a trauma-based perspective, we have to look at not what's wrong with you, but what happened to you. So we can get at the root causes of what happened. But when we suspend kids, they're not there. So we are not able to ask those first and second and those deeper level questions to say what is, to get at the root of what's happening. Because if we want to, our children to graduate, if we want to create the citizens of the world that we say we want to create, we've got to get to these root causes. So we've got to understand first that the data is clear. At least 70% of children in our district have experienced trauma. So we should go in knowing that it's a disproportionate number. We should go in saying that every child potentially has experienced some trauma so that we can say what happened. Because if we say what happened, our interpretation guides our intervention. Once we have a different understanding of a thing and not just looking at it as the behavior, we're saying that this behavior is communication. The bigger behavior is a communication of unmet need. The bigger the behavior, the bigger the unmet need. So we have to find out what the need is so we can meet the need, and then the behavior will stop. But if we're just kicking kids out, we never address anything, and kids don't learn, and no one is served by that.
We're talking to members of the Rochester Community Task Force on School Climate, and they consist of 50-plus members from really across the spectrum. Teen Empowerment, Jennifer Bannister is here from Teen Empowerment. You've been hearing from a student, Adair Lyles, who is going to be a senior at Rochester Early College International High School, who is not only on the committee but sharing his personal story that in many ways is the kind of example that the committee seems to hope becomes more of the norm across the district, not just in sort of various pockets here and there. Spiro Michaelides is here, a teacher who is working with the Gandhi Institute as well, and Melanie Funches, you just heard speaking, the Director of Community Engagement for the Mental Health Association. They're all part of this task force, and you've got a chance as just the listening public not only to offer feedback this hour on this program, but also to them. And task force members, how can the public interact with you before August 31st to give feedback on these proposed changes? Where do they do that? Spiro?
The district website has the new code of conduct, the draft, available, as well as an executive summary for someone who may not want to read all 60 pages. And there's also a survey based on the changes between the original code and the new draft that people are invited to participate in. There's a link on that website. And I want to clarify, too, I don't think we've decided yet, but we've begun talking about extending that August 31st deadline.
Okay.
So just want to make that clear.
Sure.
and that this is an ongoing process.
Well, let's go ahead. And the easiest way to digest the changes is to kind of take the major points point by point in comparing the proposal versus how it currently is. And if you don't mind, as a committee, I think for our listening audience, that's the most helpful way. So here's an example. The current code says suspensions can be used in response to any infraction. The draft code says the following. Student behaviors are divided into levels, and suspension can only be used for level 3 and 4 offenses. Low-level behaviors can never result in suspension. The code would list options aside from exclusionary discipline for intervening and responding to student behavior. Language throughout the code shows a strong preference for not suspending, for keeping students in school. And the task force has recommended suspension should only be used as a last resort. Jennifer Bannister, just as an example here, does the draft code come close enough for you to saying suspension would only be a last resort?
I think it's a great start. Again, we're working with this as a real draft. We're really trying to make this something that the community gives feedback on. And so we don't see this as complete yet. I think that what part of Adair's story spoke to was that he was using behavior and suspension was the first line of action in response to it with the current code, even in a school where he has good relationships, which is a lot of what this code, the new code, is trying to also address, is those preventative, like setting up a school climate and the ways for people to connect, staff, students, parents, community members, to connect in ways that there's a caring wraparound situation for students. And so I think that what we're really trying to do is that some of what happened for Adair later in his process, where they started to try to understand what was going on for him, that stuff is piled up in the front end. And, you know, if there's repeat and repeat and repeat situations, then there's a progressive approach to those behaviors as they get worse when they're not responding to the interventions.
Can any members of the panel kind of help our listeners understand, when we see the draft code say student behaviors are divided into levels, suspension can only be used for level 3 and 4, what kind of offenses level 3 and 4 would be?
So level 3 is listed as aggressive or injurious or harmful behavior. So I think level 1 is described as uncooperative, noncompliant. Level 2 is disorderly or disruptive. I think we want to avoid having students suspended for anything less than something that's really severe.
Physical,
absolutely.
Because currently we have students who get suspended for being caught on their cell phone. If you have an adolescent, any parent out here, I'm the parent of four teenagers. Teenagers live on their cell phone. So if you can get suspended out of school for being caught on a cell phone as a teenager, it's like getting suspended for breathing.
Well, I actually think that's not necessarily all that hyperbolic, even for some who may think so. I have a 3-year-old. He catches me on my cell phone when I don't want to be working, and he'll say, "Put it back in your pocket." I mean, even as a parent, there are times where I'm on it and I shouldn't be. So I understand the point Melanie's making, that feels extreme to you, a student suspended for being on a cell phone.
Right. I mean, if you say put the cell phone away, you can say there's what we're saying with all of these things. Teenagers are not these young docile fawns like Bambi. Our teenagers are learning to find their own voice. And what is happening is we're telling students, we're teaching them on one hand to say, find your voice, be a leader, express your leadership. But on the other hand, as they are seeking to do that, we are using aggressive measures that kick them out of school for doing the thing that we're telling them and teaching them to do. And so we are looking to have a progressive thing that really takes the time to look at making and molding the citizens we want to create.
Spiro?
And it's the defiant arguments that can ensue after the cell phones. They refuse to put the cell phone away. They refuse to wear the uniform properly. I think those are the arguments that often will end up in an exclusionary discipline situation, which shouldn't have started out that way, but it's the... So, the defiance, the disagreement that happens explodes and gets worse.
Okay, but as you described on the four levels of student behavior or misbehavior that can result in discipline and what would be suspendable offenses, mm-hmm. You're talking level 3 and 4 is physical. It can be physical violence. Then suspension is an option. Levels 1 and 2, level 2, disruptive behavior cannot be suspendable. And if I'm... I'm hearing from some teachers who've said, and you're a teacher.
So let me clarify.
They may
say, we added an aspect to level 2, which is classroom removal. The current code, there were not clear distinctions between classroom removal, in-school suspension, out-of-school suspension, short-term, long-term. So we've tried to gain clarity in that. Within the level 2, we've added the classroom removal, which I think is up to a half a day. The idea being that we want that child back in the classroom as soon as possible, as soon as they're ready. But we, as a teacher, I can appreciate, I have a good rapport with my students. I think I have decent management skills, and there are still times when I need to have someone removed from my class so that the lesson can continue. As a teacher, I need that option. But I also want to make sure that the supports that are in place, what happens to that student when they're removed from my classroom, they're actually getting help, they're getting support. Someone's trying to figure out what's going on for that student. They're not just being punished. I agree with everything that's been said, that punishment does not work as a method of change. Discipline means to teach, and so I think we're all in agreement that we want to teach our students how to behave and the consequences for actions. We don't want to scare them into making the right choice out of fear of a consequence, and Adair showed that, you know, when the consequence is suspension and kids actually don't want to be in school, then that's going to work even less as a deterrent.
And then eventually that student stops showing up entirely. That's
exactly
the concern. That's the concern. So before I get to your phone calls, we've got comments rolling in on this, and we've just started going down the proposed changes to the Rochester City School District Code of Conduct, especially when we talk about student discipline. Michael writes to us on Twitter, "I tuned in a little late. What was it about Adair that got you turned around, that got you to change direction?" So if you're just joining us, Adair is a 17-year-old student. He's going to be a senior this coming school year at Rochester Early College International High School. And he describes himself as someone who was a very, very good student all the way up till high school, hit high school, dealt with anxiety, depression, other issues, became in some ways lashing out, shutting down in the educational process, talking back to teachers. And, you know, early on, that led to suspensions. He knew it. But then things started to change, and something changed that got you back on track to the person you are now, to the student you are now, and that was a different kind of intervention. How would you answer Michael's question on Twitter? What was it that changed for you?
Well, naturally, for like this, like, okay. So there's like, they put stereotypes on kids that like act out, I guess. Mm-hmm. And they say, oh, they don't want to be in school, they're just this, they're just that. But that's not a fact. I believe that every person wants to be successful. And everything that I was doing, I wanted to be successful. No one wakes up in the morning and says, I just want to do bad. I want to end up in jail. I want to put myself in a position to where I can't go to college and stuff like that. You know, there's just like things in life that naturally, like, you know, winds in life, they're going to blow and you're going to get troubles. And as a young person, you know, I grew up in a single parent home, you know, just with my mother. And, you know, it's hard for a woman to raise a man, you know, and just dealing with a lot of the stresses that I went through, you know, just like abuse from my father, you know, verbally, mentally, physically, you know, he even did it on my mother, you know, just like a lot of these things, like, I kind of just like stored them away in my mind, just like a lot of stuff that you deal with and you witness when you go through trauma, it doesn't just go away. Once it's in your mind, you have to deal with that. Just like your body can be sick, your mind can be ill and sick, and you need that help. And, you know, just like, it may not be immediately. Some people, it may be immediately. Some people just like later on in life, in adulthood or even in their teenage life. For me, it was in my teenage life. You know, a lot of that trauma began to seep out in different ways and it began to affect me. And I did want help. I just didn't know how to get it. And once, you know, just like the people at my school, just like even workers at Teen Empowerment, you know, people like Doug Ackley, Shantara Brown, Sean Brown, and Jennifer Bannister. You know, these are people who were my support systems, and they helped me to get the help that I needed. They helped me and sat me down, you know, even with my administrators and some of my peers from school sat me down with, what's the issue and how are we going to fix this? We found out, well, these are your issues. You know, you're suffering from depression, you know, anxiety, PTSD. Well, we're going to get you counseling. And you can't focus in school, so for your anxiety, we'll give you this medication. We'll see where this goes. And me, I submitted myself to getting that help. You have to submit yourself to getting that help because no one can force you to get help. You know, you run your own life. You have to put that foot forward. But you can't put a foot forward when you can't even see where to go. And these people, no support systems, they illuminated that way for me.
And it sounds to me, Adair, in answer to Michael's question, that the school could have continued just to say, you're suspended, you're suspended, you're suspended, you're out, until you were done, until you were expelled. And Jennifer, there has to be a conscious choice somewhere along the line that says, we're going to try to intervene and understand a person and get inside what is causing this behavior in some way, even if it seems to be harder on the outside. Yeah?
Absolutely. It may take more time. And I think the point again is that should have happened at the front end. Before, I mean, I think that when Adair was telling us the story earlier, he actually had to come to some kind of climax and be expressing suicidal thoughts and all that before anything actually happened at the school. And it should never get to that point. You know, we would never wait for a tumor to grow and take over our bodies before we address it, you know, so.
And in many ways, if this code of conduct change is adopted, that is part of what this task force wants, more early intervention and a different approach. Now, for our listeners who are hearing this panel talking about the proposed changes and what they'd like to see, They are unified in what they want. And I know there are some folks who may be skeptical. Tony in Rochester, I want to go to you first because I know you have some skepticism, and I'd like you to lead off. Go ahead.
I would count myself among the skeptics. I'm a little disappointed on your table there. You have people that are wholeheartedly in favor of this. I think to some extent they're defining the deviance downward, as Senator Moynihan used to say, getting at root causes for this behavior and that behavior is, I think, a fool's errand. When I was a child, I'm 70 now, we had displaced persons, they were called, from Europe after the Second World War. They didn't speak English. God only knows what kind of trauma they had, bombs, torture, parents, terrible things. And I'm sure all of them did not succeed. But the kind of behavior that seems to be routine that this young man's describing are just beyond the pale. Certain things just have to happen. I think what you're losing in this discussion is the effect this bad behavior, if I may use that term, has on the other kids in that room. That they can't learn, but gee, Johnny is jumping from one desk to the other, he's taking his shirt off and waving it. I'm just making this up, but it might happen. The fact that he didn't actually become dangerous and threaten and start beating people, well, he has a different category. His effect on the student body, it doesn't really count. He is the one that counts. Now, an individual should stand for a lot. But there's tolerance that you just can't go beyond certain things.
Tony,
I think that's what we're running into with this code. And I've heard other codes some years back, this can be a wonderful thing. We're going to do this kind of thing and that kind of thing. We're not just going to kick things out. This thing with the cell phone even. It probably wasn't one time on a cell phone you're out the door. It's probably many, many times and maybe coming with some obnoxiousness or something, and then it looks like, the poor kid got sent out the door because he was on his cell phone. So I don't want to go on and on.
Well, Tony, I'd like you to stay on the line if you could, because I'm sure you are not alone in how you feel on this, and I think it's important to hear it. And I also wanted to say that as the host of this program, the reason I put the panel together that we have today is because this is the group that is trying to change the status quo, and I wanted to hear exactly why. But I knew we'd get some pushback, and I think I understand it. It's healthy. So stay here, Tony, and let me start with Spiro, because I know you wanted to jump in first.
Tony, are you thinking that the student you described, who hypothetically might be waving a shirt around causing chaos, would...
I didn't know what this particular young man was doing in the classroom.
No, the example, the hypothetical example that you just gave. Are you worried...
An example like that.
Are you worried
that... criteria that would be a level one or two, disturbing and obnoxiousness, wasn't a cause for suspension.
Well, as soon as that child was disrupting the classroom environment as a teacher, I would need to do what I could to help... solve that problem in the moment, and if that was not working, that child would need to be removed from my class. So I hear the concern that we're talking about less suspensions, and a lot of people assume that means disruptive behavior will be allowed more than it is. And we're not suggesting that at all. We're just suggesting there needs to be other things in place other than suspension. Like I just said, I would want to be able to remove a child like that from my classroom. I want to know that they're not just going to go sit in the ISS room and goof off all day. I want to know that they're actually getting some supports when they leave my room, and they're being encouraged to try to make it back as soon as possible. So I just want to reiterate that by no means are the changes we're suggesting going to mean that the craziness that anyone who's been in a public school in Rochester knows goes on will continue. We definitely don't want to encourage that. We're trying to change that. We just believe that there's a better way to try to do it than the current methods.
Well, I'm respecting the fact that you are a teacher. Unlike me, you've had classroom experience and you know how to deal with some issues. But quite often when we start talking about trauma, root causes, you know, abuse, terrible family situations, of course, I don't know how the school district is ever going to drill down to the root cause of anything. I mean, in my own life, what's the root cause? How come I never became a professor? How come I just kind of muddled through life, you know, this and that? I mean, I think you have to react to the objective situation. And yes, you don't want to send the kid out the door and have him whatever. But I got to think a lot of these kids that you're dealing with are not going to be helped. family intervention and all that. You know what I mean? Some kids will. God bless those that work with them.
Well, and Tony,
I think you would know yourself. You probably had kids earlier in your career that are in the penitentiary now for everything you may have done or tried to do for them.
So, Tony,
and I guess I'm over-focusing on, you know, giving up on kids. I know another thing, and at least the presentation in the paper was the high rate of suspension within the district, where they calculated like 1 in 5. They didn't indicate that some of them are repeat suspenders, kids getting suspended. It's not like you look at all the kids in the schools, every other fifth guy has been out. I think some are making it way up, you know, for the rest of them. Like in any group, 20% make 80% of the problem.
Now, it is a remarkably high number of students who are suspended in Rochester compared to other districts, Tony. That is true. And I would also just say before, I want our panel to respond to Tony's concern that it is, in his words, a fool's errand trying to get to the root causes. Because I think that, again, I don't think Tony's alone in feeling that way, but I think it's important to hit that. But let me also just say that, Tony, your experience and my experience, I didn't grow up with trauma. You know, I grew up in a very sort of simple, divorced household, but middle class, suburban. And I had bad days. We all have bad days. But there's a difference between bad days and seeing trauma, seeing violence, seeing abuse, seeing crime, seeing drugs. And that is a little different, at least in my own observation, than saying, well, Evan had a bad day. Tell him to tough it out. So I want to hear what the panel has to say, because I think this is an important distinction here. Can we drill down? Is this worth it? And let me go around the room. Melanie Funches, I'll start with you. Go ahead.
When I'm talking about getting at root causes, I'm talking about all behavior is communicating need. So like when I tell people, when babies cry, if you've ever known a baby, the baby may start out with a little cry because the baby's hungry. And if you haven't warmed up the bottle yet, the baby progressively cries louder until you get the bottle. It is the same thing. So what we do is we find out what is motivating this behavior. And it's not a fool's errand at all. If we go and we can find out why someone's doing something, you know, Adair was doing the behaviors he was doing because he was anxious. Once people were able to talk to him and find out what was going on for him, they were able to give him solutions, and he didn't act out the same way anymore. He was able to make a whole, because all he needed was his need addressed. And when we suspend, we don't address the need. What we're seeking to do through the change in the code is to give people more tools in their toolbox and incentivize them to use the full array of tools that's going to be provided to them instead of just one using suspension. We're going from the hammer and nail to a full inclusive toolbox of tools so that we can get, so teachers can teach, students can learn, and we can create a better community.
You are saying suspend fewer first and foremost, and second of all, disruption still can be removal from classroom, but not necessarily instant suspension. And for the removal, try to make it a productive day and a faster return to the classroom.
Yes,
after
absolutely.
Understand. So that's part of the structure here. That's part of the goal, and we can see if it works. Jennifer Bannister?
I think I want to focus on the fact that personnel in the schools need a lot more supports and structure around and clear guidance around how can I plug this young person into a situation where they're actually getting help, where the issue is being resolved rather than just escalating until they're just gone from my sight. And I think that teachers especially need a lot of supports. And so that's another thing that we're really trying to include in this new code. And therefore, the feedback from teachers is going to be really important, because just like having Spiro in this process and other teachers, it's been really helpful to think about the reality of each day. And then the other piece that I want to offer is that the code is only one piece of the work of the Community Task Force on School Climate. So it's not even just about intervening in issues that students are having. It's about creating a climate where you walk in the door of the school, you feel a part of the school, you feel welcome, parents feel welcomed. You're not walking through perhaps someday, hopefully, a metal detector as your first line of entry, and that there are activities and student voice that are going on in the school, that there's more parent engagement, so that there's the multiple layers that have to be happening to make any of this code mean anything in the end.
Because the thing is, the code is one piece. What we're talking about is a transformation of our educational system such that we create what we want to see. We want to see good students ready for college or ready for career coming out of school who have all the skills they need. So we need to work as the adults in their lives to create the milieu where that can happen.
And on my end, as far as, well, I respect everyone's opinion. You know, everyone is entitled to their own opinion. But as far as calling that a fool's errand, I feel like that's taking that a little step too far. Because at the end of the day, you know, that helped my life. You know, it saved my life. I could have been dead, in jail, or just anything. You know, you never know. You know, so I feel as if I'm proof that this works, you know. And not saying for every student, you know, that it's going to work. Because everyone's different. But at the end of the day, us not doing anything has only produced worse results as things go on. You know, and that's like saying, okay, veterans, they come back from war. You know, they suffer from PTSD, all the trauma that they've seen. We care about our veterans. They protect our livelihood. You know, if it wasn't for them fighting the wars that we can't fight, the wars that we don't see, we can't sleep safely without bombs going off over our heads. We don't have to worry about that, you know. So when they come back from war and they have these issues, post-traumatic stress issues, and would you deny them help? You know, people who are protecting our livelihood, and these young people, we are the future at the end of the day. You know, not trying to say this in a bad way, but, you know, people, we're meant to die. We're going to die out, you know. So everyone who's of age, you know, eventually they're going to be gone. And us young people right now, we're going to be where you guys are, you know. So would you rather have your future, like I've heard this being said many times, would you rather have your future in the hands of a bunch of broken, hurt people? And you know how that pattern goes. They say hurt people hurt people. So then that's just going to continue to perpetuate this cycle, and it's going to keep on going. Or would you rather put that leg forward and try to invest in your future now and then create a more beautiful tomorrow?
I'm way late for a break, but last quick point on this. I don't want to walk away from this point yet. Melanie Funches, the Director of Community Engagement for the Mental Health Association. We know veterans suffer from PTSD. Is there any doubt anymore that kids can suffer from PTSD based on the traumas they witness?
Absolutely not. Children suffer from PTSD. The data is clear. There is the ACEs study, Adverse Childhood Experiences study, that talks about the things that you experience in childhood, how it affects you as an adult. But we also know that children see and face and experience trauma just like adults. And there's also data around historical trauma, which is a conversation for another day. But kids experience trauma. But this is common sense. If you are in a situation where you are told that it's chronically dangerous and you're in that every day, you may not see the person get shot. But if you're told you can't be by the window, you can't do this, you can't do that, if just like it'd be trauma for an adult who has their full capacity to have their brain process, our children's brains are still developing. These things are traumatic to them. Our children experience trauma. The data is clear.
Short break, and we will dig into more of the proposed changes to the Rochester City School District Code of Conduct in about 45 seconds right here on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, have you ever been to the Chautauqua Institution and their famous amphitheater built in 1893? Well, the amphitheater is now on an endangered list of American landmarks. That's because it's due to be torn down and rebuilt entirely soon. But preservationists say it's a mistake to tear down historic structures like the institution's amphitheater, like some even in the Rochester area. We'll talk about preservation next hour.
At a summer program in Baltimore, high schoolers compete to build bridges made of spaghetti and other pasta.
What's your team name?
Nothing's impossible.
Penne for your thoughts.
I'm never eating spaghetti again.
Right, but what's your team name?
I'm never eating spaghetti again.
Spaghetti bridges falling down. Later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4 on WXXI.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. This remarkable hour is getting away from me in terms of time, but you can understand why. The passion involved, and I think on all sides, of the question of what discipline works and what changes should be made to the code of conduct. And we've been talking to members of a task force. It's the Rochester Community Task Force on School Climate. They recently released a draft of the proposed new code of conduct for Rochester City Schools. And there is a window of time for you to offer input if you want. You can go to the Rochester City School District website. You can find the entire new proposal there, or you can get sort of a draft summary of it. And until at least August 31st, if not longer, you'll have a chance to weigh in with what you think about it. Now, our panel is very clearly in favor of these rather dramatic changes, and they include the student we've been talking to, Adair Lyles, a student not only on the committee, but also a student at Rochester Early College International High School. Spiro Michaelides is a teacher who works with the Gandhi Institute. He is a member of the committee as well. Melanie Funches, Director of Community Engagement for the Mental Health Association, and Jennifer Bannister with Teen Empowerment. They're all part of this task force, and they are in favor of these changes that in many ways they are hoping takes away some of the criminalizing language. So when you kind of go down the list here of changes, we've been talking about what would merit a suspension. That's the big piece that a lot of people want to talk about. But a lot of the change that I see beyond that has to do with language. Number one, making it very clear what the standards are, because right now a lot of the criticism is that it is unclear or a little too arbitrary. And then making the language change. So number one, the current code uses language that criminalizes students' behavior. The draft code, language is largely positive and supportive. Code focuses on developmentally appropriate, proactive solutions to student behavior that disrupts the learning community. And the foundation from the task force is that the language that criminalizes behavior should be removed or used only with the highest level offenses. Spiro, I understand the point here, but again, for the listeners like Tony or for people who are writing to the program saying this is too soft or they're frustrated with kids who lash out, they're going to say sometimes we need to speak with strong language. What do you say?
Yeah, sometimes firmness is needed, but I think it needs to be really, really thoughtful. I think, you know, none of us think that this code is going to, by itself, is going to really change anything. I think it's really in the implementation, and I think that's where the task force really is hoping and wanting to work hand in hand collaboratively with the district moving forward to not only to continue to revise this document as we get feedback and engage different stakeholder groups, but as we move forward and try to implement, we don't want this to be yet another new policy that's imposed upon teachers and actually causes more challenges for teachers and administrators to deal with these challenges. We really want to move slowly and collaboratively.
Melanie?
While I am the Director of Community Engagement for the Mental Health Association, I'm also the parent of four Rochester City School District students who've graduated and students who are currently in the district. And I'm also the wife of a teacher. So I get to see this from multiple perspectives, and we can use firm language that's not criminalizing. As a parent, there are times when I need to speak firmly with my children about reinforcing rules and what is acceptable behavior. But in that language, I can still be firm, but I can still be supportive. I can be firm and I can still be affirming. Yeah. We can do both. We can walk and chew gum. We can do both.
I always worry about the self-fulfilling prophecy of language sometimes. Even with a three-year-old, I always try to say, I don't say, you're a bad listener. I say, you're a good listener, and right now you're not listening.
Absolutely.
But I know you are a good listener.
Absolutely.
And maybe I'm too sensitive about that, but I don't want to cement in his brain, well, this is who I am.
You are not too sensitive about this. This data is clear. Children learn what they live. So what we speak these things into existence. When you are told, when you are pregnant with a baby, they say sing to your baby because the baby can hear you. You're told that children learn language, and we learn how to form words by the adults around us. So just like we learn how to form words, children learn ideas about their identity from the adults that are speaking into their lives. So we can be firm And I'm not saying don't be firm. I'm not saying not to reinforce rules. But we can do it in ways that are affirming, that we speak into our young people what we want to see. So when I speak into Adair, I speak into him, you know, leadership. We need to have language that's not criminalizing, that we speak into behavior and not into the child. You are not a bad child. You may be doing a behavior right now that is inappropriate, but you are not a bad child.
Yeah, I understand that point, especially now as a parent. Now, here is one more line I want to make sure we hit that is enumerated in the new proposal, and that is when police are called. And this is a sensitive issue for a lot of people. The current code does not place limits on arrests for school-based behaviors or really address the role of SROs or police officers. Now, the proposal would specify that arrest or referral to police should be used as a last resort and when there is a serious safety threat. Spiro is a teacher, been there. You know, some teachers will say, I want that option. We need that option, and we don't want to make it out of reach.
I think we want administrators to have some discretion, and I think even with the language that's in the current draft, there are many on the task force that would like further clarification for just when law enforcement would be required to be notified and when school administrators would have some more flexibility with that.
What is the impact when law enforcement enters a situation?
Adair?
Okay. So when law enforcement is implemented, well, the student gets arrested oftentimes. They get taken downtown, booked in. They'll see the judge the next morning. Well, depending on, oftentimes that's just the average routine. But, like, that in itself is damaging in a way. Like, I know students, you know, personal friends of mine who have been called in for, like, nonviolent offenses, you know, things that they don't really need to be arrested for, and they're taken downtown and they seen a judge and now they're hassled, you know, they're missing school because I gotta go to court now, and they're put into this system that oftentimes people go back to, you know, like they're set up to fail many ways. You know, you get put on probation, you know, or what's that thing they got for kids, like pins?
Yes.
Yeah, you get put on that, and then, like, a lot of times, like, they'll see, well, you got to keep this type of academic grade, you know, you got to stay out of trouble in this area, we can't hear this and that from your principal or administrator, or you'll get in trouble, and that's a violation, and then you can go to jail. And this is, like, that's crazy. Now you're giving a person a record. You want these kids to be successful, and they're going to colleges, but colleges don't, not a really good college doesn't want anyone with a record, you know. And now you're putting them in positions to where it's harder to get employment. You know, it's just bad.
But
altogether,
everything you just said is true. But Jennifer Bannister, some listeners would say, if they've got a record, they may have earned the record. And we can't refuse to discipline even with law enforcement.
If you are getting in trouble in school for talking back to someone, like there's a obstructing government authority, I think is the charge that I have heard city court judges say, we do not need these coming in front of us out of the schools.
You've heard that?
Oh yeah, yes.
As in, like, why are they here?
Yes, they should not be here. These should be being dealt with in the schools, in suburban districts.
Well.
In suburban districts, that kind of behavior is dealt with within the school, with parents, and that's not something that we want to put our children into a school-to-prison pipeline, and lead them down a path where they're learning from people in jail.
Because what's happening is students are being sent to court for harassment, for talking back to a teacher or to an administrator, and the very immediate impact of that in a district where they're in a city with poverty like we have, you have kids who are getting arrested and their parents have to come up with bail. So a kid talked back to a teacher or to an administrator, and in the schools, if the police get called, the kid gets arrested, the parent has to pay bail. If that parent can't come up with that $100 or $200 or whatever it is, that child is spending a night in jail for being a flippant teenager. People say, oh no, that doesn't happen. I know personally of cases I've worked with where this has happened. And if the parent could not come up with the money, so the parent has to leave work, try to come up with the money, they said, well, the kid should happen. But that does not happen. Those results don't happen everywhere. These are things that should be dealt with in the schools.
Got about 30 seconds left. Spiro Michaelides, what do you expect the Rochester City School District to do with this proposal? What do you think happens over the coming weeks now with this?
Our hope is that we will articulate a process. We will come together, the task force and members of the district will actually articulate a process moving forward, one that can be transparent and that will allow for the continued collaboration between the task force and the district. There are some really important items, the role of SSOs. We want to get into the due process section.
Mm-hmm. Student rights, yeah.
Yes, we'd like clarity on the referral process. So there's a lot that still needs to be figured out, and I'm hoping that it can happen collaboratively. And that process has not been articulated yet, so that's where we're at. That's the next step.
And because I'm out of time, I have to ask you yes or no. You're saying you're hoping it can be done. Do you expect that this will be productive?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm hoping we do this differently than it's ever been done before.
All right. Well, I will say this because we barely scratched the surface this hour. What happens over the next weeks and months, let's come back. Let's continue the discussion. And for anyone out there listening, you disagree, that's fine. Let's keep the discussion happening. Thanks to all of the panel members of the Rochester Community Task Force on School Climate. Thanks, everyone. Thanks for being here. Short break and more connections next.